In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
It's time to talk movies.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Here on Pass the Popcorn, brought to you by Bangor Mall Cinema 10, where they have a film for everybody in the family. Rich Kimball here, Carrie Haskell here, Alan Adams here as well for The Main Edge. Good Monday, sir.
Good Monday to you, sir.
Welcome.
How are you?
Wonderful. And you?
I'm great.
Shorts time.
Oh, yeah. Shorts and a t-shirt. I was jazzed about it. And it was nice. Like, the whole weekend was nice. Like, we got a pretty good one. Like, the first really, like, good one,
yes.
I think. Which, of course, meant that I had a bunch of stuff to do outside because that's where we're at.
Joys of being a homeowner right there.
No, we actually cleaned out and redid our front raised bed, put in some drainage rock and some more topsoil, a little mulch, neatened it up quite nicely, actually.
Now, your wall withstood the winter okay?
It did.
We're
very pleased with ourselves. We're knocking wood that we're good for a little while, but we'll have to wait and see. And then it was my mother-in-law's birthday this weekend.
Oh, nice.
So we had some family around.
Perfect.
Yeah, it was good. We had a good one.
Excellent. And big show coming up this week. The Focus Group is back this Friday night.
That's right, we're back in action.
Starting season 11.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
God.
We're going to be on this on the stage in the ballroom at the Bangor Arts Exchange. Usual time, 8 o'clock. Usual price, $5. It'll be May 10th, so this very Friday. You want to come out and join us, we'd love to have you. And it's the number of bodies on stage will be significantly diminished from the last time you saw us, but you'll still have a good time. I feel very, very confident in telling you that.
No question about that. You saw a couple of movies this weekend too, and I'm intrigued by both of them.
It was an interesting movie going weekend, you have to imagine that the studios really think long and hard about the sorts of movies that they're going to put out in the wake of something that's so obviously going to break the box office, like Avengers Endgame. Last weekend there was nothing, nobody went in wide release because it was all Avengers all the time. But this past weekend, we got a couple of interesting offerings that I enjoyed for very different reasons. We've got the politically themed rom-com Long Shot starring Seth Rogen and Charlize Theron, and the indescribable thriller starring Dennis Quaid called The Intruder. I'm happy to go in either direction, however you want to start.
Let's start with The Intruder because that might be the creepiest trailer I've seen in ages.
Man, I'll tell you what. Like, I going in that it's that you've got a certain degree of counter programming that's going to happen at this time of year. But you mentioned the trailer and it's like you sit down and you watch and you're like, oh, this is pretty standard stuff. And then you catch a glimpse of Dennis Quaid like going for it, like really going for it in a really spectacular way. And it sort of, captures your attention a little bit. You're a little intrigued by what you're going to get. And what you get is a really weird sort of movie, this sort of B-movie sensibility, very lurid, very pulpy, very campy and over the top, that is, kind of blends some greatest hits from the whole thriller genre. You've got a little bit of stalker thriller here, you got a little bit of home invasion thriller there, and all of it anchored by just a gleefully demented Dennis Quaid. Like, he's just... And it's one of those things where it works because he just throws caution to the wind. And he's just like, this is nuts. I know it's nuts. You know it's nuts. Let's get nuts. And it's perfect. Like, it's the only way a movie like this even remotely works. Now, don't get me wrong. It's not a good movie.
But to me, he's like Bruce Willis. Like, I've seen some bad Bruce Willis movies. I've never seen a bad Bruce Willis performance. Same thing with Dennis Quaid because he never holds anything back.
Yeah, no, it's like he's very genuinely like invested in the process. And this is a huge thing, clearly having a great time. Like, he's really enjoying himself. And that makes all the difference. The plot, such as it is, you've got a sort of a upwardly mobile young couple, the Russells, Scott, played by Michael Ealy, and Annie, played by Megan Good. They live in San Francisco. He's a very successful marketing executive. And she, all she wants a house in the country, specifically the Napa Valley, where she can go and where they'll raise a family together. So he's reluctant, but he's like, okay, well, let's go look at a house. And they go look at a house, and it turns out the house is owned by a gentleman by the name of Charlie Peck, played by Dennis Quaid, who is a little weird. He's a strange guy, but not in a, you know, seems fairly amiable. And, you know, he is obviously reluctant to part with the house. Like, he clearly still remains very connected to it and is hesitant to sell, but eventually relents and agrees that he will sell this house to this couple. And and so we get to moving day, and they move in, and he moves out, and except he just keeps turning up. he's ostensibly going to move to Florida to live with his daughter, but he's just around. Like, at one point, Annie kind of goes downstairs to the kitchen to get some coffee, and Charlie's out mowing the lawn. You know, he's doing a bunch of maintenance around the house, just randomly showing up at various times, more and more often when Scott isn't at home. And he has some misgivings about this guy. He's like, this guy is just, you know, this is weird that this guy just keeps showing up and is not sort of letting go of the house. Annie, in classic thriller fashion, is like, oh, he's harmless. He's just a harmless old man. I don't think I'm spoiling anything when I say he's not a harmless old man.
Clearly not harmless.
There's nothing harmless about him. And that's all you need to know. Like, it goes pretty much how you would expect it would go. I describe this movie as if you could distill the essence of the urge to shout "Don't go in there" at a movie screen and turn it into a movie, you would get The Intruder. Like, that's basically what this movie is. It's all just, you've got the suspicious one and the naive one, and you've got the guy who's clearly not right, although no one can really seem to see it for whatever reason. And then you get about halfway through the movie, and then you get a couple of scenes where Quaid really gets to let his freak flag fly. I'm not going to go into specifics because you deserve to experience this as I did with no foreknowledge. but suffice it to say, it is just, I mean, just next level delight. Like, he's clearly in on the joke. And that's the thing about this movie. It's, I refer to it as intentional, unintentional comedy, because it's like, they know what they're doing. They know how ridiculous all of this is. They know how over the top all of this is. And so it, even though there aren't any overt, like, you know, winks and nods or whatever, at the same time, like, your ribs get a little sore from how many times they elbow you in the ribs, like, huh? Huh? See what we're doing? See what we're doing? And that's fun. Like, again, that's not a great movie, but, Ely and especially Good are very strong as a central couple. They do a wonderful job and strike that sort of yin and yang of the one who has questions about what's going on and the one who's just like, oh, everything's fine. And then, of course, you have Dennis Quaid, who I'm sure he's had better performances than this one. But I would hesitate to say that he's ever gone as, like, full lunatic as he does in this movie. Like, in a way that just, like, there are just a few tiny moments where it's just like you get this sort of flash of, like, oh man, like, if you drop Dennis Quaid into, like, a like legit thriller, like, oh yeah, like, he could do some stuff.
Well, because usually, I mean, even though he's mid-60s now,
yeah,
he's still been playing quasi-romantic leads most of the time, so this is a nice departure for him.
Yeah, it's a welcome opportunity for him. And again, like I said, like, I don't, like, this movie's not nearly as entertaining without him. Just, I mean, four on the floor. Like, he is not at all afraid to make choices that are crazy and weird and like, allowing himself to like, look crazy and weird, which, you know, some actors struggle with.
Yeah.
Like, he might have been one of the ones that I would think maybe would struggle with that a little, just because he has that sort of classic leading man kind of thing. Mm. But no, quite the opposite. He's just like, he's clearly been ready for this. Nice. And so just really leans into it. Yeah. Again, not a great movie, but I had a really good time.
All right. Long Shot. Seth Rogen, stop me if you've heard this before, playing kind of a schlub who ends up with a gorgeous, brilliant woman.
Yep. Yep, that's pretty much the gist of it with Long Shot. In this particular iteration, he plays a gentleman by the name of Fred Flarsky, who is a journalist, sort of a progressive, edgy, like writes for an edgy like Brooklyn publication, the Brooklyn Advocate. We first meet him going undercover at a neo-Nazi rally, trying to get a story for his publication. Meanwhile, we've got Charlotte Field, played by Charlize Theron, who is the Secretary of State and serving under the kind of delightful and dumb President Chambers, played by Bob Odenkirk.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I love that.
And President Chambers got the job. His sole qualification was he played the president on a TV show.
Well, that kind of thing couldn't. Oh, wait a second.
And so she decides that she starts to low-key plan to run for president because he tells her that he's not going to run for re-election because he wants to pivot to movies. Which, again, it's just delightful. And so she starts putting together her plan to start running for president. And the sort of linchpin of that is this environmental platform that she's putting together as Secretary of State to try to get countries to sign on for and all this stuff. But she's struggling with humor and relatability. And so the spheres, the stars align when she goes to a fundraising party for the World Wildlife Fund. And who's there but Fred Flarsky, because his buddy Lance, played by O'Shea Jackson, is some sort of like rich like hedge fund guy, and so so he was able to get into this fancy party, and that's when we find out that that Charlotte and Fred know each other because she was his babysitter.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
didn't see that coming,
right? And so like, and they were only a few years apart, but he had a childhood crush on her, and she was always very nice and all this stuff. And, they remember each other, and she decides she needs help with the sort of the lighter side of things. And who better to help her lighten up than someone who knew her before she was, this big deal politician. Right. And so Fred gets brought on the team and starts doing some speech writing work for her. And,
sparks.
One thing leads to another. And, As one might imagine, the combination of being Secretary of State and planning a presidential campaign, you don't have a lot of time to meet other people, and so they sort of find one another in a way that is, frankly, shockingly believable, all things considered, because doesn't really pass the eye test as far as their dynamic is concerned.
No, but Rogan's always, he's got a pretty charming on-screen presence.
Well, and that's the thing. And it's funny, and it's not really fair to him, because it's not like he's an unattractive guy, but like Charlize Theron is like, I mean, she's otherworldly, like she's like an alien. So it's like, so the two of them together, it doesn't quite fit. But again, it's like you say, his charm. Oh, like
look around the room at those who outkick their coverage.
Trust
here.
Me, I know what it's. I know what it means to punch above my weight, which is one of the many reasons why I feel an unsettling connection to Mr. Rogan. It's super funny. Like the love story between them is, it feels very genuine. They have a great chemistry. She's a very gifted comedic actress. Which is something I don't think she necessarily gets a ton of credit for. The dynamic between the two of them are great. The supporting cast is fantastic. And the political stuff is surprisingly engaging. Like it's not too heavy-handed, but they take their swings when the proper opportunity rises up. And it's just, it's a lot of fun. Like, there are a couple of really great sort of let the hair down scenes, and the two of them together are, you know, they're super funny. And again, here's the thing with Rogan. He's always going to deliver the sort of juvenile, scatological stuff that will eternally appeal to the 14-year-old boy that I will always be. Sorry, honey. And so it's just a lot of swear words, a lot of poop jokes.
Yeah.
One particularly gross viral video situation that I'm not going to go into here on the air, because again, you shouldn't know that this is a thing coming. But yeah, so the two of them are great, but the supporting cast is phenomenal. Like, you got Odenkirk, O'Shea Jackson is someone who I think is incredibly talented. Alexander Skarsgård shows up as a clear Mulroney, Prime Minister of Canada ripoff.
Oh, really?
Which is very fun. And an almost unrecognizable Andy Serkis as a Rupert Murdoch analog, who's just gross and disgusting and just frankly a delight. You add it all up and you've got a really fun time at the movies. Like, it's the jokes come fast and furious. You know, the political stuff is very much oriented to, I think it's safe to say, the leanings in this particular room.
So the correct ones.
As far as that goes.
Yeah.
It fires on all cylinders. Like, it's not, it's precisely the sort of movie that needs to be counter-programmed against an Avengers Endgame. It's also the sort of movie that I feel like we see less and less due to the success of gigantic franchises.
Yes.
and the like. But as long as movies like this continue to have a degree of success at the box office, even when faced with a movie that's going to make $150 million in its second weekend, I think we're going to be okay. And if not, Netflix will probably pick up the slack.
Well, I like me the movies about humans. Those are fun.
Yeah, no, it's a good one. Like, you and the wife should check it out if you get a chance. I think you'll enjoy it.
Excellent. Thanks, Al.
My pleasure.